When things are in your head, you're thinking about them, you come to conclusions about things, but when it's outside of you and you're looking at it, it becomes more objective. I was noticing patterns about him and about myself, and it kind of put all the puzzle pieces together. And I think making sense of something helps you come to more of an acceptance and understanding of it so that you can be at peace with it. And that's what it gave me.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel, Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth today and going, known as podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts. And if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers indeed. That's right, indeed, cooler than two cucumbers indeed, because we got a best-selling author, y'all, who is a lovely wife as well as a mom, speaker, and a survivor of different types of abuse. So it ain't just one, it's been multiple, but she's alive and kicking today. That's right, indeed. She's alive, kicking, and kicking high. So let's give it up for the DSD herself, the delightful, stupendous, and delightful again, because she's twice as delightful, Dana Diaz. How you doing today, Dana?
I feel really good after that introduction. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, D. It's right, D. Here's one of the better parts of the show before the rabbit holes appear. Yep. That's right indeed. Back what she had to do with the rabbit hole earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tried to hop to it, but we fell to it. Fell inside. That's right. Woke up on the other side and realized, hey, this is still the US of A. Hey. Oh, there's barbecue over there. Oh, wait. Nope. That's not barbecue. It's a trap. I was just messing with
you. You're just something. Here I'm coming on here to talk about narcissistic abuse, which is this awful, horrible thing. But boy, it's hard not to laugh with you. This is good. I like that, though. And I think that's important, though, for people to understand. I mean, at least for myself, you can go through decades and decades of being treated like a piece of crap. And it's okay to still smile and find joy in every day. Like, I think people expect me to be like Wednesday Addams, like withdrawn and snarky and resentful and bitter and have this attitude against the world. But it's a beautiful place, especially with somebody like you who makes it so joyful.
Ah, yes, right indeed, with a capital J and D. That's right indeed. Gotta keep the joy going. We're built for joy, darn gummit. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. But hey, as with all introductions and rabbit holes, well, mostly introductions are not allowed to be 35 years long, and it probably won't be covered. I don't know. 35 days of what makes the delightful Dana the Dana that she is. It's my filling in any cavities I may have missed about you.
Well, it started pretty much at my birth. I was born to an unwed teenage mother back when that wasn't okay. And she didn't want me any more than the man she married wanted me. So I was just kind of like there. They made sure to make me feel like a burden and a bother, and that they were just basically obligated to feed me and shelter me and clothe me. And that's how I was treated through my childhood. And so obviously I left their home as soon as I legally could. And I was like, I'm never going to let anyone mistreat me again. You know, in the midst of all this, there was also physical abuse, which, you know, some have experienced much worse, but it still wasn't fun what I dealt with. But I ended up falling for a young man who was the only person that seemed to show any interest in me. And so, I mean, I hate to say that I was desperate, but I was desperate to cling on to anybody that was showing me any kind of affection or attention or, just anything at all. And the alarms were going off. He reminded me very much of my abusive stepfather. They were very different, yet very much the same in how they wanted entitlement. They wanted to be like praised and held to this level of adoration that exceeded what you should be giving God. Like, it was ridiculous. And so I'm like, no, there's no way I'm going to serve this man. I'm not giving him what he wants. Well, 25 years later, I had given him everything and then some. I basically let him take my soul. But when he stole my health, because my health just declined rapidly and I ended up autoimmune and with a lung disease, that's when I just decided I can't do this anymore. I tried to be noble, I tried to stay, but he was verbally abusing me, emotionally gaslighting me. There was physical threat, there was stalking, intimidation. We had some issues with guns and knives. We had sexual abuse, legal abuse, financial abuse. I mean, it was literally like walking through a minefield. Like, I never know what was going to come at me next. And I never had time enough to process what had come at me already to be able to deal with everything else. And I'm trying to raise our son in the middle of all this and make our son feel like he was a normal kid in a normal family. So it was something.
Oh yeah, something is right. Cause checking out some of the past stuff, it's like, dang, it's like, the red flags were there, but it's like the
Oh, yeah.
desperation saw the red flags as just random flag poles.
Pretty much, but I think a lot of people do this. It's funny that looking back, like we all meet people in life that we just click with. It's like the instant you meet them, it's like you've known them forever. But I feel like, especially in romantic relationships and family relationships too, we just ignore that. We like try to force fit ourselves to that other person and try to force relationships that just aren't meant to work. And why is beyond me. I think it's because we want things to happen on our time and we want things to be how we want them to be instead of how they organically should be.
Yes, right indeed. But I heard his parents are cool people. That's what kept you in there longer, though, right?
Yeah, that was the weird thing because I kept doubting. I mean, he was making me doubt myself. I mean, the gaslighting is real when somebody is constantly telling you that what you think and your perception of things is completely off. And I never said that. You misunderstood me, you misinterpreted. And then I meet these two lovely people who, created him and raised him. And I mean, they were like Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver, like out of the old show. It was like the Waltons or something. Like they were just like too perfect, And they treated me like I was their own daughter. And I mean, I think in a sense, I might have fallen in love with them more than I really had with him because I didn't have those parents. I didn't barely had parents at all. I had two people who called themselves my parents, but they never, ever exhibited any, indication that or any support or encouragement or all these things that parents should be. And here, these two people who barely knew me were willing. And accepting and welcoming. And I thought, oh, there's no way he could be how I think he is. Or, maybe he's just having bad days or something's going on. Like I started, I hate to say, turning into my mother, by excusing and enabling and tolerating because, I couldn't just accept what was before me for what it really was.
That part's always got to suck. It's like, oh, try to avoid being a parent. It's not out of nowhere. It's like, oh, it's a fork in the road became a spoon and scooped you into that direction. It's like, no, oh, no,
Yeah,
I did
pretty
not want
much.
to be like the past generation of me. No,
I
why
know. Here,
the
I
hell
thought
am
I was the cycle breaker, and it was like, no, I was doing the same thing. And I mean, even in my marriage, when I had gone to my mother, I had gone to her and said, there were numerous times that my husband was unfaithful before we got married and after. And I remember going to her the one time and saying, he's actually moving out this time to go be with this girl because he says he's young enough to marry her and start a new family with her and forget me and everything else. And my mother said, well, You married him, you made the commitment, you need to stay. And like there was like no support at all for me or for what I was going through, which kind of alarmed me because if I had a daughter that had come to me and said that, I mean, I'd be driving to her house and packing her crap up and taking her with me. Like I would, that would not be okay. And I would give the guy peace of my mind, whether it meant anything or not. But, you know, it's just what my mother was willing to accept in order to have the life that she wanted, which was that she hadn't had a daughter out of wedlock. And as a young teenager, she wanted it to look like, you know, like, nope, this is my husband and this is our daughter together. She even had my name changed. She had him legally adopt me. They put him on my stepfather and my birth certificate, saying that he was my biological father, basically defrauding the government in a legal document, which is still intact today and ticks me off. But yeah, you know, she just felt that if you want things to be a certain way, it doesn't matter. She even wrote me a little letter once that said, it's okay to be a hypocrite. And I'm like, no, actually it's not. But you know,
Wow.
yeah, that's the next book. That I'm actually working on that one. That's coming out this year. That was an interesting setup, but I was basically primed to be in this situation with this man that, you know, having this domination over me and being able to control me basically and control our lives gave him that sense of power that he didn't otherwise feel. And that's basically what this narcissism is, because I know the word's thrown around a lot and people use it just to mean something negative, but really we're talking about people who need like extraordinarily high levels of praise and admiration in order to feel good about themselves. But the irony is, they really don't like themselves at all.
I guess that explains why folks like that make the lives around a living hell.
Yeah.
Freaking shame. Shame indeed. Shame indeed. So my goodness, so my goodness. So infidelity before time and not infidelity during, well, I should say after time and not, and I guess after having your little one. So my goodness, like, dude. And I guess you were raised Catholic, basically, right? So I guess it was the spiritual aspect too, where it's like, oh God, I can't divorce. I might get sucked into the abyss.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, I was born and raised Catholic, and you just don't get divorced. And I was kind of pissed off at myself too, because the sad part is that I mean, I remember when we were getting married. I was more excited about the getting married part, like having the actual wedding, than I was about actually marrying this man, because it's not like I was disillusioning myself. I knew what I was getting into. But because we were young, I kept telling myself, well, maybe he'll mature. Maybe he'll grow up. Maybe this, maybe that, you know, maybe when we became parents and I just kept waiting, maybe wishing, hoping, and it never happened. But the infidelity, I mean, it was all the way up to the end. And he was always very bold about it. And I know a lot of people that have been in this situation have agreed with me. They want you to know they have other options because they want you to know, like, you should be lucky to be with them. You should be lucky that they let you be with them. And it's such a demeaning thing, and it makes you doubt everything about. I mean, I was like, am I not skinny enough? Am I not pretty enough? Am I not like, what can I do differently? I mean, we all want the person we be, you know, that we're with to find us attractive and to want to be, you know, faithful to us. And so I kind of like, he kept turning it around on me, like it was my fault he was doing these things, you know, and it's such a horrible thing to feel. I mean, I didn't need help feeling low self-esteem in that situation. And then he was making me feel like I was mentally unfit to raise our son on top of it all. But yeah, when he told, I mean, there were so many times he'd go out with friends and he'd come home and he'd be like, oh yeah, I made out with a woman at this bar and I let this woman at this bar do this with me. And she just, I can say some nasty things and I won't, but it was just so hard because he just made a point of making me feel, so unworthy and undeserving of even just his slightest attention. And then even at the very end, before I filed for divorce, just so he didn't have to feel the rejection, he rejected me that one last time and said, "And I don't ever want to have sex again. I'm not interested in doing that with you." And it was like, that's fine because I didn't try to do that with him at that point anyway, but ouch, that hurts.
And you're freaking gorgeous, so it's like, dude.
Oh, thank you. Well, he didn't make me feel like that. That's the irony, though, is that, after the divorce, there were two incidents of domestic violence. He did threaten my life. He told the neighbors he was planning to kill me. I'm still standing, thank God. But, he tried to guilt me even after everything, after the divorce, after the domestic violence, and sent me, I forget if it was a text or an email. But he was like, "I used to have a beautiful wife. I used to have a house." And I'm like, "But you're the one that pissed it away. You're the one that mistreated me. You're the one who did all these things. And the fact that I stayed so long is a damn wonder because I gave that man more chances than I think he probably deserved." But, how many of us find ourselves in those situations? So I'm just glad I finally figured it out. I'm glad I finally woke up. It took me, having that, health issue, well, a lot of health issues, to finally realize, like, this man is not worth my health. This man is not worth me dying. On top of him wanting to kill me, he doesn't even have to, because my own body was turning against me at that point, because all this mental anguish that I was going through was just exhibiting itself physically. And I didn't realize that stress could actually kill you, but it was actually what was going on. It took Mayo Clinic to realize that my stress hormone, cortisol, was 4 times higher than it ever should be in any normal human being. And it had been that way for so long, for decades, that it had caused all these medical problems. So that's why, like, the scratchiness you hear in my voice, that's a lung issue that developed as a result of this high stress situation. The doctor says it's like having COPD and fibromyalgia all at once. So it's absolutely impacted my life and something I'll live with forever, but it's better than living in those circumstances forever. So, once I figured out that I didn't want to die for this man and that there was certainly no way I was going to leave this earth and let him raise my son, I kind of was like, yeah, well, I guess I'm going to suffer in hell if the Catholic Church wants to damn me there, whatever, because it's better to be there, than on here. It was hell in that house with him here on earth. It just wasn't worth it anymore. And I was willing to take that risk. And you know what the irony is for anybody that is faithful? Guess what? The day after my divorce, I walked into my church. I walked right to my priest with my divorce papers. And I said, "Is there any way I can get this annulled?" And he said, "We all know what you've been going through. Small town stuff, everybody talks." He signed off on it. $40. My marriage was annulled. It's like it never happened, except 25 years of it actually did. But here I had been so worried about my church turning on me too, because that was the only place I felt safe. And that was the only place I had people that I felt protected by. And here all along, if I had known that it would just be that easy, that would have alleviated that stress. And I would have possibly gotten out before I got sick, even.
Yep, indeed. It's right indeed. It's right indeed. And it's not like you're in the right place, at least spiritually, at least when it comes to church family in a way, because the church family that still has a faith, that still is faithful and everything, still at least has reality in front of them, and not the folks who want to act like everything's fine. So, yeah, glad you
Right.
were at the right place and it wasn't. Folks like, oh no, you have to stay with your abuser. Like, nah, that's not healthy. Because
That's
it's like,
archaic.
yeah, that's it. It basically would have been suicide, to be honest. And good thing you
It would have
escaped that.
been. It would have been. And I think it was helpful. And it depends what priest you talk to. And I mean, I don't like to be one of those people that picks and chooses how I, practice my religion, but when I had a heart to heart with my priest after all of that, and he heard I was writing the book and everything, and you know, he made me feel better about everything that happened because he said, maybe you were put here on earth. Maybe it was God's plan for you all along that you went through this in your childhood, that you went through this in your marriage, but he also gave you the talents for writing and he gave you the gift of speaking and he gave you an education. You went to university and have a degree in communications. You know, you studied journalism and psychology. So he says, I don't think any of this was a coincidence. I think you're exactly where you were supposed to be. And I think that helped me feel better about the situation because I felt like then it wasn't for nothing. And sometimes we do have to go. I mean, I always joke with people who say, I'm praying for this and I'm praying for that, but it hasn't come through and God must be against me. I must have shamed God. And I, you know, I don't want to get into philosophical stuff or offend anybody, but I'd like to think God doesn't want us to suffer unless there's an actual reason for it. I don't think he's just trying to, like, you know, make us suffer because he gets his jollies out of it. I think there is absolutely some purpose that we have to go on the path that we go down sometimes. And just because you pray and just because you are faithful doesn't mean your life is going to be sunshine and rainbows. But I think that your life has meaning in its own way in the grand scheme of things. And at least for me, that is what has made me feel better about everything that I had gone through. Because here I am, 3 years and 4 months out of that marriage, and everything that I had always wanted my life to be has come to fruition. I am writing full time. You know, I'm a published author, but I will have a couple more books coming out within the next year. And I'm remarried to somebody that doesn't want me dead. I know I ask for a lot in a relationship, but you know, it's nice to be, you know, married to somebody that you know, actually wants me here. So, you know, it's been wonderful and I feel like I feel absolutely firmly, authentically that I am standing exactly where I'm supposed to be in life right now. And I would, people ask me all the time, if you could go back and tell your young self something, or if you could go back and change the one thing. And the thing is, I wish things had been different. I mean, I didn't ask to be strong. I didn't ask to carry the burden of everybody else's shame and unhealed trauma and all that. But I wouldn't change anything. Because that would change where I am right now, and I wouldn't trade this for the world.
Ah, beautiful indeed, beautiful indeed. So, speaking of writing with your magical journalism degree, what was it like putting pen to paper and recounting those stories and finally getting your first book out the way? What was that the
You
process like?
know, it was a process because actually, what it was that at the end of our marriage, it was right when COVID hit during that shelter in place. I talked to an attorney about filing for divorce 1 week before that shelter in place. So we were locked in the same house together. Courts were closed. Everything was shut down. Things hit an all new high. I'll let everybody read about it in the book, but I started keeping a journal because I was really worried. I mean, there were a lot of signs that he was going to try to make it something look like an accident that wasn't an accident. So I was keeping a journal every day, writing down things he was saying, things he was doing, texts, emails, whatever, because I needed to make sure that he would be found guilty if something did happen to me. So after everything was said and done and the courts reopened, I filed for divorce, all that was done. I kind of was looking back at my journal the one day and it just kind of hit me out of nowhere. I'm like, you know, I cannot possibly be the only person that has experienced something like this. Because I think everybody in a situation like that thinks that they are. Because outside in the world, this person who's doing and saying all these things to you, they're very well liked. They're coaching Little League. They're volunteering at church. They're in the community. People like them. They're charming. They're charitable. They're generous. And it's so frustrating because at home, you're getting this whole other side of them that nobody would believe. Even your own family doesn't believe you, your friends, your neighbors, nobody would ever believe a word you say. So you kind of think like, maybe you are nuts. So this journal kind of helped me, like looking back and seeing some of the things that happened and that I wrote about. I was like, this is like insane. Like I even forgot that some of the things happened and they were horrific. So I thought it was important to just kind of write them all out, elaborate the stories, because I listened to my first podcast ever. I didn't have a smartphone until the divorce because he didn't like me having access to the internet or books or the outside world. You know, God forbid anyone else influences me. So I was realizing that this was a thing. This was an actual thing that people are experiencing outside of me. And this podcast I listened to, a woman was telling her story. And I thought, oh my gosh, every word. I was like, I know. Yes, he said that to me. That happened to me. And so I thought it was really important to, you know, put the stories out as a book and let people know more than anything that you think you're being noble and staying, whether it's your faith or you think you need to stay because you got to keep the family together for the kids, or maybe your families are intertwined somehow and you don't want to disappoint your families, you know, whatever financial reasons. There's all these reasons we have to stay, but I needed people to understand like your health can get affected. This can literally kill you. And the longer you stay, especially when somebody has attempted your life, the longer, you know, the higher the possibility, the risk is that you won't have a life to live. And I just love that I have achieved so much since in such a short time since leaving that situation. And it's like the world has opened up to me, everything I ever wanted, my heart's desire, because I'm free to be me and I'm free to do the things that I want to do and pursue the interests that I have and realize my dreams. And I want that for everybody else. When things are in your head, you're thinking about them, you know, you come to conclusions about things, but when it's outside of you and you're looking at it, it becomes more objective. I was noticing patterns about him and about myself. And, you know, it kind of put all the puzzle pieces together. And I think making sense of something helps you come to more of an acceptance and understanding of it so that you can be at peace with it. And that's what it gave me.
So I'm talking about days. I'm talking about date. Certain day, it's a good thing you decided to journal all that stuff because when we're going through some, it's like, oh, freaking, can I get to the light at the end of the tunnel, please? And let it not be a freaking train this time. And it's like, oh, I'm out. Time to forget everything. Oh, wait, I journaled everything. All right, cool. We're safe. Oh, man, I went. Oh, man, that was a. I knew I should have made that left turn at Albuquerque, dang gummit. Certain day, should have made that left turn. It's like, darn it. I knew when he drunk the beer, it was over. Should have never let him do it. That's right, indeed. Should have brought two shirts that day. He's like, thank God. What was I not thinking? Right, indeed. So, my goodness, the good thing is, though, is that you not only write, if I'm not mistaken, you also play piano, right?
I played piano and viola when I was young. Yeah, I still have my piano, but it's been a while. I haven't tapped the keys very often, but I might do that. I'll get through these next two books once they're published and I have a little time on my hands. I will probably go back to the music because music is definitely what got me through my childhood and, you know, definitely through my marriage as well.
So is there going to be an eventual one-woman show? It's like, hey, escape your narcissistic spouse through music. That's right.
Well, my chapter titles are all song titles, and there's a reason for that. It's because when I was a kid and I would stand up for myself against my stepfather, that's what would get me beat. So I had to learn to kind of express myself in ways that weren't, you know, they weren't coming from me directly. They were more passive. If I was just singing lyrics to a song, you know what I mean? Like he couldn't, you know, come at me or take offense to me just singing a song. So, you know, that's what got me through. That was a coping mechanism. And I have discovered that other people have done that too. But I think it was definitely a helpful way for me to express everything that I was going through because you got to get it out of you somehow. And if you're isolated or controlled in a way where, you know, your communication with other people's restricted, or if you're just straight up afraid, which I absolutely was. You don't want to be the person that runs around saying, oh, this person's doing this and that to me, because even if they do believe you, you're going to get your ass beat when you get home, you know, because they're not trying to let you run around saying that stuff about them. So it was a good way to express myself and vent all my emotions and all the stuff that was inside of me. But now I just use my mouth because I'm not scared anymore.
Oh, there you go. That's right indeed. Her tongue's got boxing gloves, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed.
They can.
Right indeed. So, my goodness, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're doing interviews like this?
No, I think I've done enough that everything has been asked of me, but feel free to ask me whatever it is that you think people haven't asked of me.
Ah, there you go. She gave me a trap door. I love it. So, if your
I
fabulous
gave you a
book,
trap door.
that's right indeed. Time for you to fall in it. So, if your fabulous book, Gasping for Air, The Stranglehold of Narcissistic Abuse, if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
If it were food, it'd probably have to be something you choke on, but that you like. I mean, because that's kind of how it feels when you're in a narcissistic situation. I don't know. That's a good question. I do like food, but I can't think of anything. I mean, this sounds terrible, but like I'm a big rice person, but sometimes if I don't chew it up enough, like it gets stuck in your throat and you start coughing it up and it just gets stuck there and you know it's terrible, but then you keep eating and you keep hoping it'll just you'll be able to gulp it down. And so I guess that's what it would be, but that's so bland, and my book is not bland at all. It's very I've heard it's a page turner. A lot of people can't put it down, so just whatever it is, I guess a bag of potato chips, maybe. Like you can't stop eating
Ah, there you go. So, ways to feel
them.
chipper after narcissistic
There you go.
abuse. There you go. That's right indeed. If the rice is river, you'll be able to escape down the river away from your abuser. Run, fly away. That's right indeed. Speaking of flying away, so how was it like from the recovery process? Because if I'm not mistaken, what was it, 3.5 years, right? Since it was during COVID, you're basically a book boomer because your book was published during COVID.
Yeah, I mean, but the recovery is great because, the one thing that I've learned is that when people have hurt you your whole life, especially the people who say they love you and that you're supposed to trust and supposed to rely on for, to be the most accepting and forgiving and welcoming and all that of you, is that it's better to keep going out there. You got to keep sticking your toes in the water. Not everybody's that way. Are there trust issues? Absolutely. Is it scary, to be around certain people that give me a bad vibe? Absolutely. But I don't think the answer is shying away from that. And so many people that have been in abusive situations tend to, hide and isolate themselves afterwards because they think they're protecting themselves. But we all deserve love. We all deserve joy. And you can have a certain extent of that by yourself, but you're not going to experience life fully by being alone. So I think it's important to just go out there. And, like I said, I'm not telling anyone to run off and get married like I did. But, in my defense, I knew my husband's family for almost 20 years before I married him, my current husband. But it was nice to be able to have, interactions with other people where all these things I was learning about, how to, react differently to situations and how to regulate my emotions and how not to, how to prevent a panic attack or anxiety from surfacing when I was triggered, all these awful things I was dealing with. It's nice to have somebody that's that safe person that I can practice those tools, but this person isn't going to judge me, shame me, abandon me. He gave me a safe space. And for some people, that's their mother or a sister or brother, or whoever, a friend. I didn't have that stuff though, because my ex had taken everybody away from me in one way or another. So with my new husband, kind of being my crutch, I was able to kind of get back up on my feet and keep moving forward one step at a time, getting better every day. And I think we're all on a healing journey forever and ever, but I am pretty proud of myself for, coming as far as I have in such a short time. Definitely, writing about all the experiences for the books has been, a really effective way to deal with a lot of things, but definitely also continuing to interact with people, even when I'm uncomfortable and even when situations are a little more toxic than I want to be, it's helping me react to them differently so that I can go out and be, a person who experiences life like everybody else and not have to hide away.
Yeah, I'm talking about dude. No hiding away, y'all. It's right indeed. Watch out for those flags. That's right indeed. And if you don't know what the flags are, turn your eyes on and drink some coffee first, maybe. That's right indeed. Make sure you can see them. Put on some night vision goggles, even during daytime, if you have to. That's right indeed. You got to make sure you prepare. That's right indeed. Avoid them potholes, pitfalls, right? That's right. And occasionally those turtle shells, too. Yeah. Can't always throw them at the Koopas. That's right. Well, I don't know why I went down the rabbit hole to the Mario reference, but okay. Anyways, so coming down
I
to
did
the
get that, by the way. I was like, turtles? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember those. I had a Nintendo 64.
Yeah, and you're my kind of people. We're coming south to the magical question. Actually, Betty, before I even ask that one, you mentioned two other books. So what can we expect from those after folks cop some copies of book number one?
So the next book coming out is the prequel, which talks about my childhood. Talks about how I had to deal with my mother's shame for, that she felt after having me so young. And it just goes through a lot of what emotional abuse and emotional neglect looks like from the child's perspective, and how that basically shaped me and primed me to be this codependent, desperate for love, girl that fell for the guy in the book that's out. But there's a lot there, and people don't realize emotional neglect is actually the most common form of abuse. It's just not recognized by our systems, but boy, the damage it does, it can really lead somebody to, lead a life that they don't deserve. So I definitely want to shed some light on that. And then the book after that will be the sequel to Gasping for Air. And the sequel kind of talks about what we were just saying a little bit, how I went from that situation to then, being able to heal and find love again, even when it was the last thing I was thinking about. But there's also a new villain in that one, because my ex-husband was not the first narcissist to abuse me, nor was he the last. There was indeed another one that came along, and it was a friend of 16 years that turned on me, and boy, it got nasty. So that one's a little juicy.
Yeah, so it's a whole watermelon then. Okay.
It sure is.
Oh, okay. All right. There we go. All right. That's something to look forward to indeed. Or indeed, I guess it wasn't the Sweet 16. That's right indeed. Instead of Macho or March Madness, it was just madness and mayhem. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. At least that's what I'm assuming. That's right. Folks need to be on the lookout for that book too to figure out, is there something that we need to know? Was it really a March Madness, or was it the whole freaking year in an ordeal? That's right indeed. Well, anyways, coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive. And that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Oh, wow. 25 and now, boy, I would live a lot better than I did, because you actually touched on something, because I feel like my 20s and 30s were just wasted on that man. I would be just living life. I mean, I'm going to go buy myself some bikinis, and I'm going to go travel around to some tropical beaches. And I don't know, I'm just going to do stuff that I should have done in my 20s instead of what I did. So I'm just going to go have fun, live my life, travel, have some pina coladas, But I want to do it with my husband, though, even though everyone will think he's my father because he's already a lot older than me. But that's okay. We all need a daddy, right?
I know he's happy to hear that one if he hears this interview. And you're one of the few who actually listened to the whole question. I freaking love it. That's right, indeed. She got the inside joke. It's like, oh, yeah, my hubby would be a cradle robber if this happened. All right.
Okay, I'm good with it. Pretty sure he wouldn't mind either.
He'd be like, oh, sure, she's got more energy than usual. All right, this is great. I won the lottery twice over. This is great. It'll be a win-win.
We're going to a whole other podcast
Oh, don't worry, it's the same one. And you thought I was joking about the rabbit holes.
That's okay. I like rabbit holes. You know what? Rabbit holes are where you find reality. That's where reality lives.
So what you're saying is we all should start wearing bunny ears from now on.
Well, you're making it sound like I should. My husband might like that.
He'll be like, man, you need to go on that podcast more often. Dude, what did
Yeah, then you'll need to have an interview with him. And talk about a survivor story, 59 years old with a 25-year-old with bunny ears. That would make a good one. But we're talking about Hugh Hefner now, so
Oh, he'll keep you even longer. That's the good news. That's the good news. It'll be one. It won't be a whole harem.
Yeah, you never know. It goes to their head once they put on that red velvet robe, you know?
Well, avoid the red velvet robe. Just have red velvet cake instead.
Yum. I'm all for cake.
That's right. The good news out now is that you're now in a place where you can have your cake and eat it too. That's right, indeed.
Yes. Oh, good transition. Yes, absolutely.
That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. And the good news is the wonderful Dana's got enough cake for everybody who's listening, indeed. So for those who need to metaphorically grab a slice of your magical cake via your magical book by buying some magical copies and share it with friends and family. Keep it up with your journey when you release more content. What's the best way for folks to do so?
I would say go to my website, danasdiaz.com. Link for the book is there. Link to Facebook and Instagram's on there. This podcast will be on with others that I've been on. So please share it, like it, subscribe to it. Or you can just go straight to Amazon for the book, Barnes and Nobles, wherever you get books online. But thank you guys so much for having me. And I hope somebody will reach out and get that book and maybe share it with somebody they think might benefit from it, because you never know, it might give somebody the strength to, you know, realize the kind of situation they're in and make a better decision for themselves.
Woohoo! We are the right folks making better decisions for themselves instead of butter decisions, y'all. That's right, D. Name of the game, better not butter. You don't want your decision to melt when there's heat, y'all. It's got to be better than that, y'all. That's right, D. That's right, D. So we're going to put a link to all of Dana's goodies in the show notes. That way you can follow her, keep up with all the stuff that she's doing. Heck, hopefully nobody in your family's going through the issues she had to go through, but hey, you might get to something and learn something new. I'd be like, hey, let me make sure I listen to some family out there, making sure I can possibly help if there is something going on. Hopefully, nothing's going on, but yeah, it's right indeed. It's right indeed. Well, Benny, parting words before we close up shop, Dana.
I think all I want people to know is that there's life on the other side. If you're going through some stuff, and I think everybody goes through stuff, just remember it's just temporary. It doesn't stay that way forever. Keep pushing through and just decide what your life is going to be like and love yourself enough to go live it.
If you're listening to this, that means you're one cool individual. If you want to be cooler than two cucumbers, share this episode with someone that you think will enjoy it too. And be sure to subscribe and keep being fabulous.